Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, hello, everybody. I'm very excited about this show today. My guest is Elizabeth Conte. She's an award-winning women's fiction writer who brings what she loves about 19th century literature, let me pronounce that properly, to the 21st century reader. Welcome back, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Marcia. It's so good to be back. You know I adore your shows, and I'm so excited to be here again.
Well, you know, it's funny how connections happen, and you and I have talked several times, minus the podcast time, and every time I speak with you, I just feel my hand just went right over my heart. It just makes me feel so connected to you, and we don't live that far from one another. One of these days we're going to meet.
No, we don't.
But yeah. We sure will. But to continue with this podcast, for those people that didn't hear our podcast last year, I thought you could just tell everybody just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a local. I'm actually native Californian. There's not many of us, as you know. So I live in Southern California,
right,
in Orange County, like you said, not far from you. I have a husband. I'm married, and I have two, I hate to say this, adult children. One's 25 and one's 20. I don't know how that happened.
I know. Because what, you're just 25?
And I have a dog. Can't forget my dog. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you have a dog. I forgot you had a dog, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I have a family and a life.
Yes. And, you know, there's something about living a life with purpose. And when you have a family, that brings immediate purpose to our lives. But depending upon how you move forward, you know, sort of defines you. And, you know, people that know my backstory know that, you know, I didn't think I'd be on this journey, but I didn't expect my husband to die in 2009. So, but I do live a purposeful life, as do you. And not only that, you are very accomplished. I want to congratulate you on the Silver Award in the category, in the literary category for love story and romance, because that just happened for Finding Jane, which is what we talked about when you joined us the last time. So we're going to talk a little bit about that book as well. But for those people, but congratulations. I don't want to overstate
Thank
that.
You.
And I also, but I also want to send people don't always know how names are spelt. And I think it's important for people, if they want to go to your website, which is beautiful, Elizabeth is not spelled any differently than every Elizabeth you've ever known, from Taylor to anybody else. But her last name is spelled, thanks for laughing. I paid her to laugh, you guys. Her last name is Conte, and that's spelled Conte. And so her website is elizabethconte.com. And there you will see her sweet face in front of that brick wall. So, but we're going to talk about why you started writing, because that's a great story, and I'd love for you to share that.
Well, I started writing because, like I said, you said earlier that I like 19th century literature, and I want to bring that to the 21st century woman or reader in general, and that's, I wasn't finding what I loved about classic literature. And so, I've always been a writer, but I thought, you know, I have stories in my head. Let's do this and write the story. They always say for an author, write the story that you would read. And that's kind of what I did. I wrote the story that I wanted to read in the way that I wanted to read it. And what I love about that is just the nuances of old world writing that we kind of skip over in today's writing. A lot of descriptions and a lot of characters and that the drama and depth, there's just something I think that's missing in modern literature, because we live in a world that's very fast-paced. You know, we want it right now, right here,
right,
we see it in front of our faces, and it's gone, and we have something new. Where literature in the past was, you know, people had to imagine what everything was. People didn't travel. You know, they didn't have the experiences that we can have in an instant. There wasn't photography. There wasn't television. So you had to write it. And I think a lot of modern literature goes really fast. About, get to the point. Show me what's happening right now. And I was missing that long, drawn-out drama of a story, of walking into a room and being told what it looks like and who's sitting there and how, you know, their little nuances about how they talk, or, you know, what they're wearing, or, you know, what's sitting on a table, because it all enhances the story for me. And so that's
right.
why I started writing, because I wanted to bring back that kind of literature to, in a way, I should say, to the 21st century person, so that they weren't bored, but they still got that feeling that I was looking for. It was more about a feeling than it was just about the words or about the story.
Did you love writing as young as a child when you were growing up in school?
Yeah, I loved to write. My father was a teacher, so he read a lot. We read a lot, and I wrote a lot. It was just, you know, it was a different world. I'm a Gen Xer.
Yes.
We spent our free time reading, playing, writing, playing music, things
right.
like that. We didn't have all this stimulation on electronics. So, yeah, I've always written. And I kind of have to laugh, because when I was in the business world, I was told to stop writing so much in my emails. Get to the point.
Oh, that's so funny. There you go. So you categorize your writing as literary romance. So define what that means to us. What is a literary romance?
Yeah, so it's not really, I would say, a known category. And again, it's going back to that old world genre of romanticism. But romance in itself is a category. It's a genre, just like mystery is a genre or fantasy is a genre. And genre fiction tends to be more plot-driven, and it has a typical arc. So when you pick up a romance, you usually know the drama that's going to happen. It's a cute meet-cute. They fall in love. Something happens. They get separated, and they have a hero that comes and gets them back together, and then there's a happy ending. So that's, an arc of a romance, and I mean that in a very general way. And in literary writing, it's more character-driven, not plot-driven. So it's about the character and character development. So I wanted to kind of mesh what I love about literary work and bring romantic elements back into literary. And we have stories like that. And I would categorize like Pride and Prejudice like that, or, you know, maybe like an Outlander, or I can't even think of all the books that I've loved over time. Like Out of Africa, or maybe A Room with a View, or Guernsey Literary and Potato Pie Book Club, or something like that, Society. Those are books that I would say are very literary, but they're also very romantic. And so I would categorize that as literary romance. And that's kind of what I want to bring back. I love romance. I love romantic stories, but I'm not really a plot driven reader. I like more literary works. And so I want to mesh the two. I hope that makes sense.
That does. That's very interesting. I think that really does describe you well. And you refer to 19th century writing, but what makes the writers of the past so significant? Because they obviously played a part in this.
What makes them so significant to me?
Yes.
Are you asking?
I am.
I think it's the quality of the writing, I said earlier that I want to read a book and feel it, where a lot of our stimulation and entertainment is just seeing it. And I think when you read a book, you should feel the book. And when you leave it, you feel empty because you've been involved in that. And that's, to me, what I get out of 19th century literature, is that I feel those stories rather than just reading it.
That's very interesting. I have a feeling that people that read like you do, that spend a lot of time reading, that are in book clubs and do these kinds of readings, books, I would imagine that they would say the same thing. You want to feel something. I mean, I'm a TV person. I want to feel something when I'm watching something that's significant. I'm relating to what it is. So I understand what you talk about when you want people to feel it. But so how have those past writers, some of those creative writers in the past, how did those people contribute to your writing?
First of all, probably I tend to write a lot of descriptions. I have a lot of dialogue with tags on them, meaning like he said, she said, but it might be a movement that I explain. My words are, people go, oh my God, you write so much.
Well,
because I love words, and the beauty of words is also a part of writing. And like I said, sometimes we tend to write things just to be really, we live in a very fast-paced world, and everything's quick, 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 you know, get to the point. I want to stay there and feel it and move around in it. And so words do that for me, and that's what I love about reading, is that you kind of get dive in and get to stay there for a while and imagine and create in your head. And it's not just like going by really quick, getting, I'm like that today too. I might listen to, you know, a video or something like that. I'm like, okay, get to the point already.
Yeah. I'm thinking about you and I'm visualizing you right now. And I'm visualizing you reading something that you've read before, but maybe you're reading something that you haven't read before. Are you one of those people that takes a highlighter and highlights text in books?
I highlight phrases that I think are really deep or that I want to remember or just kind of chew on. I circle words that I love. You said, how did the other authors influence you? It's words. I love new words. I don't have the grandest vocabulary, but I do love words and the usage of it and how they arrange it. I love adjectives and adverbs that a lot of writers will hate today because they say cut those. But I am a highlighter and I put little notes at the end and I circle paragraphs that I want to discuss with people. I'm a nerd.
No, I like that because I think that shows organizational skills, frankly. And but when people do highlight things, you know, I think it allows you to go back and go, oh, yeah, that's right, you know, or maybe it just brings it to your attention. When your kids were growing up, were they big readers as well?
They had to be because the schools that they went to, there was a lot of reading. And I think that's good and that's bad because now that they're older, it's like, oh, my God, I had to – I mean, they read philosophy books. I thought they're giving you – what to read? This is hard for their little minds, you know, or just really depressing things that I thought, oh, they're good stories. So I think they kind of got burned out. Like I said, my father was a teacher, and he tutored at home. So we had a big library in the garage, and we always had books. My dad was a big reader. My mom was a big reader. So and my sister's a big reader. All my families are big readers. So we're just, that was kind of our thing.
You know, I was thinking about your first book, Finding Jane, and I was, has it ever just occurred to you, because we're going to talk about your new book that just came out, but could you imagine in your mind a movie based on your book?
Well, yeah, I think every writer does. You've asked that question every writer. No, I actually pictured it as a miniseries because
there are
so many elements to it. And again, because of my writing and I'm so descriptive, I want to take the time and see the sceneries of these books and the clothing alone. I want to see on the big screen,
I just think that would be so cool. So, you know, many people find the books of the 19th century and even the 20th century to be a bit antiquated and sometimes hard to read. What would you say to those people?
Well, that's kind of why I say I want to bring what I love about 19th century literature to the 21st century reader, because they can be difficult to get through just the slow process of communicating or having something happen and they aren't getting to the point. But I would say to those people, and even the concepts of men and women's roles or, you know, things like slavery that, you know, you like a lot of my English books, they have servants, you know, and sometimes I get kind of sensitive about calling them a servant because we don't really refer to people as servants like that in the way that they did. And that can mm-hmm. be offensive and antiquated. But there's understanding of culture over time that I think we have to appreciate where we are today. And so to not overlook that or even place upon our values of today on those kind of writings and those kind of works, because there's something of value. And everybody's life, our lives aren't any different than the people of the past. Our feelings, what we want, what we seek, aren't any different from the past. And there's always a human element that we learn from, and we have to be patient and understanding and learn from. If it's not good, we have to learn from it. So I would say that there's so much value in understanding these readings versus judging them, even if they're antiquated.
That's very well said. Doesn't surprise me that you would say that. So you mentioned that your dad was a teacher. I suspect mm-hmm. that you did a lot of reading growing up. Do you still read a lot today?
Yeah, I read a lot. I'll read everything I can. Now, when I say that, I have to laugh because I've done studying of writing in England, and I always felt when I would go into these retreats with writers and these wonderful, brilliant, noted authors, and what they have read and the volume that they've read, the fact that they can quote poetry just off the tip of their tongues, I felt like the little kid in elementary school that knew nothing, because they're mm-hmm. so well read. But I say to that because I've read different things. And so I'm a fiction writer and I love stories, but I don't read a lot of fiction. That's why I kind of made up
really?
The sense that I was reading a lot of fiction. Yeah, I read a lot of history, philosophy, science. I just read a lot of different things because I love the world. I'm excited about the world. I'm excited to learn about it. So I have a lot of fascination with, you know, science and archaeology or, you know, history. Like Finding Jane has a lot of science in it you wouldn't know, but there's actually a lot of science of why she traveled through time, because I wanted to be very accurate as I could, even though this is kind of concept of time travel. I thought, you know, if you're going to read this, you're going to go, wow, that really could happen. So I put that all into my writing to write fiction, but I really do read a lot of nonfiction.
Do you ever have more than one book going at a time?
I have. I'm counting now. I think I have 5 books by my bed. I have 3 by my chair. I keep one downstairs, and I've got some. It just depends upon my mood. I mean, I have to read a book every month for book club, so I get centered on that. But then you have different moods. Like some days I just want to learn about something, and I'll go read it. Or I'm in a sleepy mood, and I just don't want to think of something too deep.
Interesting. So, and you're able to not confuse yourself like, what was that? What was that guy about? You're able to separate all those books and remember where you left off.
Yes, but here's the thing about writing. You should be able to pick up a book and remember who the character is, what's going on, you know, what the drama is. That's how good the writing should be. I have to tell you that I haven't found a lot of books where I pick up and I go, oh, yeah, I got to get back to that. Or that's why I'm writing, because that's how I want you to feel. Like when you pick up one of my books, you think, I can't put this down, or I can't wait to see what happens. I want to be with these people again. You know,
right.
That's good writing to me, when you can't wait to get back to those characters, or when you leave a book and you're like, oh, I have to leave these people. I love them so much.
Yes. Do you visualize as you read?
Yes. You know, I there's some science to that there are some brains that cannot picture things like to you might be very natural. If I started describing, you know, there was a boat on an ocean and it had stripes on the bottom and there was a big red flag on it, you know, you could picture that right away. But there's actual brains that can't do that. There's actual people that cannot visualize. And I found that fascinating. I'm like, wow, how do you go through life not being able to picture things?
Wow, that's
interesting. Yes, I visualize a lot. Yeah.
That's cool. Do you have some favorite authors that you like reading?
Well, besides the classics, one of my favorite authors today is Amor Towles. I just love his writing. I think he's a brilliant writer. Gosh, his words are just good.
Mm-hmm.
And visual, and he writes really interesting stories, interesting characters. And he has three books out now. The Gentleman in Moscow is probably one of his most famous. But I just think he's a brilliant writer. Just a brilliant writer.
I've had a lot of authors on my show over the years, and you had asked me how long have I been doing this. A long time. I mm-hmm. started in, when was it, 2015, I think, in a mm-hmm. studio here in Los Angeles, and that went for 3 years, and then that turned over to being a podcaster, which really opened the floodgates for me personally, because now you didn't have to drive into Westchester to join me, and which is what you had to do if you were going to be on my show. And so, you know, I have people mm-hmm. all over the country that are my guests. But because I have had a lot of authors, everybody has their own sort of way of writing. When you write, do you outline, are you pen to paper? Are you fingertip to computer? How what's your style, or are you a combo?
You know, I think this is a really good question to ask authors, the different authors that you have, because everybody has a different style and a different technique. I mean, mm-hmm. I work with writers who outline everything. I have writers mm-hmm. that literally write from chapter 1 to chapter 30 in order. I'm amazed that you can write like that. I'm a little haphazard. I write scenes. So I write when something's happening, and I always say, I talk to dead people, because that's how I see my books. Like, I'm starting to write my third novel. It's finished. I've got to go edit it. And then there's another novel I want to write, and it's been coming to me. And when I say it's coming to me, literally I have my characters, these people, I can see them, I can hear them. They're talking to me. They're having conversations in my head, and I think, God, I got to sit down and write this because I'm going to forget what they're saying, these beautiful scenes. And so I write them as it's happening, talking mm-hmm. to me. I have to go and write it down. And then I can sit down and write scenes, and then I kind of put them together, which usually kind of flows into a book, but I am not, one to write in order. I write, I don't know how to explain my head, but it just kind of happens, and I watch it happen. And the more they talk to me, the more they're developed, the action happens. So I kind of know the concept that I'm doing, and I kind of know where it's going. I don't know mm-hmm. how it's going to end.
Interesting.
It's kind of fun
because it's evolving, right? I mean, that's what it's doing.
Yes.
What I think about Elizabeth is that it keeps you motivated, like, oh my God, I wonder, maybe this, maybe that. Well, I don't know about that. You know, so I can see where the excitement would be there, you know. But for me, I know I would have to at least write down some key words so I realize, oh yeah, I did think about that too, didn't I? Otherwise, I'd lose it. Oh my God.
Yeah, so,
it's
a very different technique. And for like mm-hmm. mystery writers, they have to know that there's this mystery, what the mystery is, how it's going to be solved, who's involved. I don't have those restrictions or constraints on me when I write, because I write different. I'm more, I'm not a plot-driven person. I'm more character-driven. Mm-hmm. So I can have new characters come in. I can kill them off.
It's
a different process for me.
You're so funny. So if you're out taking the dog for a walk, and you walk, you say hello to somebody that's walking their dog, and they're walking towards you, and you're walking, and you're looking up at the sky, and it's a beautiful day, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I just thought of something. Do you talk mm-hmm. to talking to your cell phone and give yourself a note, or do you have paper with you? Or
yes.
I mean, if it's something just
no,
comes
I have.
To you.
I have done that.
I was wondering if you did that.
Yeah, sometimes the words are so beautiful in my head, and I'm like, I gotta write it down exactly like that. So I'll take out my phone, but not a lot. Most of the time, it's just sitting down and mm-hmm. writing, and then I'll say, no, that's not how it's said in my head.
Right. Oh, it's that whole multitasking thing that can be such an enemy. Let's talk about this fabulous book. We're not, because I do want to talk about your new book, but let's talk about Finding Jane in your first book, because maybe people didn't listen to that podcast. So tell us a little bit about what Finding Jane, and that book, it was also historical. It was a you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. time travel book, a sweet romantic journey of a woman trying to find love and its meaning with modern day perspective to an old world notion. So tell our listeners that maybe missed that podcast what Finding Jane's about.
So Finding Jane is about a modern woman living in today's times who really, you know, plans her life, and we all do. Mm-hmm. You know, she had a career, she had a boyfriend that she'd been with for almost 9 years, living together, having a great time, and then he suddenly kind of just says, you know, this is not enough for me, I need something more. It's not you, it's me.
Oh, God.
And her world kind of falls apart because her life is planned, and we tend to do that. We live in a very structured world where we plan our life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to finish my career, going to go have a job, then I'll get married, and you know, we do that. And so her world was kind of deconstructed all of a sudden. And so she goes to England to kind of figure out what's next for her. And while she's there, she meets a psychic where it tells her, you know, you're kind of special. You have a special energy. And she only realizes what that means when she wakes up in the 19th century in this lovely English town. And her world is kind of turned upside down, and she has to kind of deconstruct her own notion of what, you know, what her world is, what other people's world is, what love is, what relationships are, and all of that. And she kind of figures that out in the 19th century through this time travel book. And it's a really sweet story. It really is. It's romantic. It's interesting because, like I said, I have this time travel element that's really realistic. It's a lot of characters. So when it came to – can I move into Chosen Mistress?
Sure, sure.
So when I was doing the research for this book, and there's, you know, it's 19th century England. It's 1830s. It's right after the Regency, or, you know, the last half of the Regency period. And there's a lot of research when you do historicals. So I had to look at things like, how did people eat? What utensils did they use? How did they shower? Because she's a modern woman going back in time, I had to figure out, how did she brush her teeth? How was she going to bathe? How was she going to use, like, you know, womanly products and things like that?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have to put in the book, but you have to have that
curious mindset
of a modern woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how am I going to live in this world, and can I fit in this world? And so I had to look up all this interesting stuff. You know, what they wore, how they dressed, what did they have on their beds? Did they have mattresses? Did they have pillows? Like, so many things nobody ever thinks about,
cool.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when I was doing that research, I came across all this other stuff. And when I say all this other stuff, it really was the underside of an era that was what we tend to think of as, like, innocent or pure or lovely. There was a lot of, you know, hidden stuff about people. And it made me realize people never change. And I think that's my point of Finding Jane. It's like, it doesn't matter what time you live in. People are people. They're the same no matter what
right.
you live in. Same problems,
right.
same concerns, same wants and desires. They just wear different clothes.
And they probably don't have the internet.
They had other entertainment. So Chosen Mistress,
yes.
I found a lot of deep things. And so that's why I skewed my book more towards the mid Victorian era. So it's 1850s
mm-hmm.
this book takes place. And we tend to think of the Victorian era, you know, as this kind of Puritan era, people with morals and values. And then you start reading what people's lives really were like and what was hidden. And that's what got me thinking. I'm like, this could be a great book. Hence, Chosen Mistress came about.
Well, that was the perfect segue. Maybe you should be a podcaster. So let's talk about your new novel, Chosen Mistress, which is quite an interesting cover, I might add. We'll talk about that in a bit, because you took left turn. We will. You took a sharp left turn dealing with the dark side of love. How did you get there?
Well, like I said, so there was all this interesting stuff about people's lives, their secret lives. And Chosen, if your readers don't know, Chosen Mistress is about two cousins who are closest sisters, and they get separated right when they're becoming women. And Charlotte, who's the main character, suddenly becomes penniless and homeless. And her cousin says, you know, come back to England. I will take care of you. But when she gets back to England, she realizes that her cousin Lydia's life isn't as perfect as she thought. And her cousin Lydia... marriage is kind of failing. And so she turns to Charlotte and says, you know, I need your help. And they always promise they'd be there for each other. And she goes, okay, what do you need? And she says, I need you to become my husband's mistress. And so that.
Oh my goodness.
It takes away this. And everybody goes, why? Oh. And I go, because you have to read the book to find out. And so there starts the dark side of marriage and relationships and the secrets everybody holds and how they maneuver their lives behind this curtain. And I look at all aspects of life, not just those two, but everybody involved, and the world in which they are placed is supposed to be this image of one thing, but how people's lives really are on the dark side of that. And so it's not the sweet innocence, the innocence of Finding Jane, but it's still very romantic, great characters, great relationships, moral values, philosophy. It's got everything but the kitchen sink in there.
Wow. Wow. Well, it sounds very scintillating and almost an ideal spicy romance book, but you do not categorize your book as a romance, and I'm just curious why.
Mm-mm. Well, I, because I'm writing books that are character-driven, not plot-driven. And I like to say, not that people who read romance won't like my book, but when you read a romance, you're expecting a certain arc and you're expecting a certain behavior of your characters and the plot and the way it goes. Mine really is character-driven. It's about, you know, these women, and there's many women in this book, their lives and maneuvering their lives and developing and managing their life in a world that's very misogynistic and limiting to their power and how they wield power to get what they need and want in a world that doesn't allow them to have that. And so it's a very philosophical concept of a book versus just, you know, here's a story, let's go through it, and, you know, and here we are, have a happy ending. So it's really about how these characters maneuver their world and how they developed and how you, and you get to see that, you know, through the story and at the very end. So I'm not a romance book. When you pick up a romance, you're going to expect a certain thing. And I don't want people to go, okay, because there's not always happy endings. There's a lot of twists and turns. And it's not, this relationship isn't about a man and a woman. This relationship is really about Charlotte and Lydia and their relationship together, their friendship, their bonds, their family.
Interesting. So it sounds like it's a pretty layered book. But ultimately, it has a feminist theme running through it, right? So what can you tell us about that?
It's so funny because I didn't set out to write a feminist book. But I live in the 21st century now?
I don't know. I can't keep track.
I've grown up during the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and I'm aging myself. So, you know, I live in a world where, you know, women have changed, our roles have changed, our power has changed. And so I guess I'm always going to write, in fact, I was reading an article by somebody who's saying that all our books have elements of us as authors. And so I'm always going to, like, it's even with Finding Jane. Jane is, you know, a strong woman. So I'm always going to put that in my characters because that's how I know women. That's what I know. You always write what you know. Mm-hmm. So the women in here, they're all really strong women. And I think what I love about it is, like I said, they get to their, and not that they know it, but they don't have a lot of power. They're not significant. You know, women are there to get married and bear children, and then you grow old and die, right? So these women, but that's their world. It's not like they know that. They're like the bemoaning that. That is the world that they live in. So you have to look at
the reality.
That's the reality. So how are they maneuvering their lives? And that's what I love about this book. It's like, wow, like today we go, I wouldn't put up with that, or I wouldn't take that, or I would do it differently. But you wouldn't, because that's not the world they lived in. So how did they manage to find happiness or to find freedom or to wield power so that they could get through day-to-day life? And you see that through my different characters of women in this story.
Wow. Do you ever visualize them?
Yes.
I bet you do. I expected you to say yes.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I write my characters, I do give them a descriptive character. You know, I describe that Lydia's blonde or, you know, golden and Charlotte's brown hair. But I purposely write my characters, my books, so that everybody who's reading it has a different vision of who that person is. They don't have to be, look a certain way, and you know that's what that person looks like. I want people to feel like Charlotte, they can step into Charlotte's body and that they can imagine mm-hmm. themselves living her life, making the decisions that she has. So I purposely try not to pinpoint those descriptions. So can I see them? Yes. And if somebody said to me, let's make this a movie, you know, who do you want as your character? You know, I would probably say, I want somebody who's like, you know, 5'4", brunette, da, da, da. But I wouldn't say I know exactly who I want it to be, because I think anybody can fill that role in certain descriptions. Because I can picture them, but I also don't nail down exactly what they look like so that you can imagine in your own mind what you think they are,
who they
look like. Mm-hmm.
So when you wrote this book, who were you appealing to? Who did you think was going to be your, as they say in your world, your target market?
I say this a lot. I think a lot of books today, especially romantic books, are targeted towards a younger audience. And being the age that I am, somewhere up in those 50s, I just found like I wasn't finding characters like that I could relate to, because I have mm-hmm. I have a lifetime of experience, you know, experiences and thoughts and growth. And so I wanted to have characters that I felt more simpatico with. Like I can imagine my life like that. And a lot of times I just find characters really young in stories that I sit there and go, I can't relate to that because I'm past that. You know, I'm a grown mm-hmm. woman with adult children now. You know, I've had a lot of experiences. So I tend to write my books. My characters are young. Don't get me wrong. My characters are in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm writing older characters or younger characters in particular. I wanted to appeal to a wider audience of women. So I want to make sure that I'm not catering just to one age group and their sensibilities. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I want
it does.
So my age group is probably I would say 35 to 65. Like my range, that's my target audience.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted more. I said I add a lot of philosophy and depth to my storylines because I want somebody to enjoy this great romantic love story, but also things that they can chew on as well and go, that makes sense to me because that's something that I would think about now as an older mm-hmm. woman or something like that. So it's different. So you say my stories are layered. Yes, they are layered. Like with Finding Jane, it's a fun time travel romantic book. But then when you look at the layers of it, you know, I've got some really interesting political stuff in there of the time. Philosophy, mm-hmm. like I said, science and history, it's all there. You just, if that's your sensibility, you'll find it.
Did you bring that kind of thought process to The Chosen Mistress?
Yeah. So,
okay.
So again, it'll be a fun, scintillating kind of, I think, kind of sexy book
mm-hmm.
and this kind of controversial element of it. But then, like, when they're talking, there'll be layers of philosophy in there. And my friend, she goes, well, you're really talking deep here. And I'm like, yeah, if you want it, it'll be there. If you don't want it, you'll just skip over it. It's a layered story, so you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
By the things that they talk about or the way they treat different people in the story or the way they see certain values in a story. You know, some people will pick up on it, some people won't.
Right. So, you know, in both of your novels, you have strong female characters who have great conflict mm-hmm. over men. That hasn't changed forever. Morals, love, and yet they are not mm-hmm. enemies, and they're not out to get mm-hmm. each other, which I think is very interesting. This is a little unusual storyline in a world where there's drama and revenge. Talk mm-hmm. to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, again, I hate to keep on going back to Finding Jane, but there's a main character
That's
who's
okay.
her love enemy,
sure.
so to speak. And mm-hmm. but there's scenes that I will write about. And so, and the same with Chosen Mistress, you have Charlotte and Lydia, they're love enemies. And it could be very dramatic, and they could hate mm-hmm. each other. But I don't, like, to me, it's like we're human. And I think, especially in the world that we live in now, we're like really going into this black and white world. Like, if you believe this way, you're against me. And I don't think mm-hmm. we are like that. I think humans are more have more in common than they don't. And I think we sometimes forget that, and that we can have opposing thoughts and opposing situations, but still be kind or empathetic or understanding of each other without killing each other. And I mean, that's kind of my general view about life, you know? And so I never wanted my characters, I think that's like, there's too much hate and battling. I don't like that. I wanted to bring it to a higher level.
I get that.
A more human level, a more, you know, like, cause there are two sides to everything. And sometimes we do things, we're not trying to hurt each other, but we do. Mm-hmm. And there's consequences to that. And I have, all my books have consequences for actions that are not good. And there's a moral value in everything I write.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I don't want the, quote, drama to be in hating each other. I want the drama in the story.
So I get that. So why did you choose to create this kind of narrative?
that goes back to my original. I have characters that talk to me. I don't know how to explain it. It's just these storylines come to me and the people come to me and they start talking to me. And it's kind of like I'm writing their story. I'm not creating
mm-hmm.
it. So this story, I mean, because if you were to say, why did you choose this story? Why have her cousin be her husband's mistress? And what was that? Like, I was going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you a little secret, everybody. I don't know.
What? Oh, that's funny.
There's
oh my gosh!
Great, like I had to say something. It was kind of like these people came to me with their story, and I had to write it down. I know that sounds weird, but that's
no.
What
I would imagine that if you were to go to a writer's workshop, and you were sitting, or you went to a TED Talk, and there was a bunch of writers in the room, I bet you'd be hearing mm-hmm. very similar things from those writers as well. And I think that I think this is, you know, I'm a word person, you know that about me. And
uh-huh.
Sometimes and when I don't know, I'm not uncomfortable to ask or even repeat myself until I figure it out. And we had talked off the air, and I thought maybe we could just do this right here real quick. When you refer to yourself as a writer, I always thought that somebody that wrote a book, I always thought, but I think it's incorrect, that if you wrote a book, and I'm using the word writer, I always
mm-hmm.
thought that meant that you were an author. But there's some distinguishing differences, is that right, between what somebody would refer to themselves as an author over somebody that refers to themselves as a writer?
Well, you know, and you say that, and it almost makes me want to go and do some research on it, because I don't know how people who write a novel, do they consider themselves just an author? Do they consider themselves a writer? I mean, does it take several books to be, say, I'm a writer? You know, I was telling you that writers come in different forms, shapes, everything. You know, you can write
mm-hmm.
journal articles. You could write sports columns. You can, you know, write graphic novels. So you write, I mean, the value of writing, everybody's a writer, you know, they all can write, but to me being a writer, like my profession being a writer is that it's my skill set. I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm getting better. It's just like if somebody was a plumber, I can fix a sink. Do I call myself a plumber? No. You know, he has a skill set, a knowledge, a background, and experience. So I kind of, for me, and other people might say it differently, so I'm not going to define it for everybody else, but to me, I think if you call yourself a writer, is that is your skill set. That's something that you develop and learn and grow and are doing and experiencing all the time. There are many people who can be an author. They write a book and they say, oh, I authored a book. You know, that there are just
mm-hmm.
different ways to look at it. How you define
mm-hmm.
yourself, I won't say that this is how everybody is, but that's how I look
sure.
at it. You know, I'm an author and a writer because I write poetry, I write short stories, I've written for columns for the industry, you know, so I've written lots of different things. I'm constantly learning, growing, taking classes, being under the tutelage of people. So I'm trying to be a true writer, like a skilled writer. And that's why I call myself a writer and an author. Because I've authored novels and things like that.
Okay,
does that make sense?
It sort of. So
yeah.
Let me ask you this then, when we're talking definitions, and this, I don't mean to sound ignorant. What's the difference between a novel and a book?
Oh my gosh, you just
sorry.
Me. I don't think there is.
Okay, good. All right.
I don't know if there is. I prefer
they're interchangeable.
To call my book a novel. Yeah. I think it's
okay.
Interchangeable. Now somebody's gonna call or write in and go,
Well, you know,
and
everybody has. There you go. So will I. So, how long did it take you to write Chosen Mistress? I'm just curious.
This book actually, when I say it started coming to me, and I remember the moment it came to me, it started flooding my head, and I think I wrote it in 9 months.
Wow.
But it's taken me almost another 9 months to edit it and get it out into the world. Maybe a little longer. So, you know, to me, I take a long time to write books. I'm not one of those people that can write a book in 3 months or, you know, 18 days or whatever some people can write. I need time. I'm about a 9 month writing the book. If I sat down every day, I write it in about, you know, 9 months. And then depending upon when I needed to get out and my editor's time and everything, is editing takes a long time for me.
So
it's just another process of writing.
Okay. So let's go back to your books for a minute. The men in your books. Can we talk? Many will complain that the men in romance stories, women's fiction in general, are not realistic. They're too kind. They're too good-looking. They make love too well. They express their feelings too unrealistically. That love doesn't look like that, the way you portray it. You know, so like with princess stories of the past, are you perpetuating a fantasy that only disappoints women when faced with reality? Let's talk about that.
Probably. You know, men are flawed. Let's just face it. And I had a lovely father. I mean, he was not perfect, but he was a great man. And I know a lot of great men. I know a lot of great relationships, men in relationships. So, you know, I have a high, I don't want to say high standard. I just have seen a lot of good. And I feel like sometimes, especially now in modern, we look at men and we make them dumb, stupid, fat. They don't get things. Like, we're kind of perpetuating this notion that men are oafs. And I don't think they are. So, I don't want to portray them as oafs or the bad guy or the violent guy, or, you know, I want to bring out the goodness of men again, because I think it goes back to how I feel about our humanity. I think people are, there are good people, and there's nothing wrong with treating them as good individuals. Now, I say that in that I want my daughter, who's 20, she reads a lot or watches shows, and men are always like, awful. They're just treated, you know, they're just like the bad guys. They want to use you, da 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 da. And I get it. There's a reality to that. Don't get me wrong. But I also want her to see what men can be and have a standard of how she should look at men in the world. Like, if you constantly see men as jerks, oafs, idiots, you know, you're going to constantly look at them that way. And you're not going to have high expectations. So I kind of wanted to treat men in my stories as honorable men, men that you should want to have in your life, men that you should achieve when looking for a spouse or a partner. Does that make sense? I'm not idealizing them, but I want them to have values. Yeah, I want them to have values that you will take and say, that's what I want in a man. That's what I'm looking for, and that's what I'm going to expect. So that when you go out in the world, will men fulfill those expectations? Maybe, maybe not. But at least you know what you want and what you're worthy of.
Right. I do think that in the household that you grow up in with your mom and your dad, do you think that that has an effect on how you approach this?
I think it always has an effect on how we approach life. Is the people that you're surrounded with. You know, I have three brothers and a father.
Yes.
So, you know, I see men, you know, how I saw men in the world was how they behaved and how they treated their spouses or girlfriends or just the world in general. And, you know, my brothers are really good guys. So, you know, maybe, you know, and I want my daughter to see that too. I want my daughter to know that they're good guys out there. And so,
absolutely,
yeah, it definitely has an effect on you. Yeah.
So well, you found one.
You know, I did. And I think that my men, I don't want to write them too, and I don't write them perfect at all. And I make them think like men. So when you read them, they have thoughts
good.
Like men. And, but I don't want to trash them. I want them to be, I always have them really kind of acting, well, there's bad characters in them. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
The heroes of the stories have moral compasses and moral codes in which they live by and act upon. And so that's how I present them in my stories.
Well, I like
good
that.
Or bad.
I mean, well, you know, I think about my own husband. I think about my own father. I think about my brother, you know. And I do think it's, you know, we all live our own personal lives. But I think that, you know, to just put every man into a book as a bad guy, you know, and not worthy, you know, is you know, I mean, I wouldn't appreciate that. But and looking at your cover, and all the, those of you that have already visited Elizabeth's website, or if you haven't, you sure need to, the cover is quite beautiful. And I'm sure there's a story behind this. Can you tell us about it and what problems you've had about it?
Yeah. So the cover, if you know, people don't know, it's this beautiful woman who's naked, basically. She's curled up.
Yes.
And I have it covered, you know, with all my designs and everything like that. But it's a famous painting by Henry Lehman. He was an 18th or 19th century artist. So it's about, it's almost a 180-year-old painting that I, you know, got from the Met. And paid for it, by the way. And it's a beautiful representation of my story. I think it's just got that romanticism to it, and it's beautiful. It's not erotic or, you know, raunchy or anything like that. But I,
right.
And you can see it. It's very pretty. But I have been turned down by TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all not wanting to take my ads because they quote, it's indecent or you know, it doesn't. It's nudity that they don't accept in their advertising, and I'm just kind of aghast. Like I'm like, what? Like this is a famous painting. You wouldn't do this with, you know, the Statue of David or Botticelli's Venus. You know, you can see that all
right.
over the internet, but for
right.
some reason, this picture, they turn it away because of nudity, and it's really tastefully done. It's not. It's not like I said. It's not. It's not erotic or lazy or sexy in any way. It's just a really beautiful painting. And I'm just kind of shocked. And I think this goes back to my storyline. Like you could have a naked man and no problem, but you have a woman and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we can't show that. And it's like,
it's double standard
again.
I just laugh
at it. Go ahead.
No, I didn't. Let me let you finish your thought. And I wanted to give you my opinion about this cover as well.
No, I just wanted to be really beautiful because the book is really beautiful. The storyline's really beautiful, even though it has this kind of scintillating title, Chosen Mistress. It's definitely scintillating, but ultimately it's beautiful. It's a beautiful romantic story. And I think the cover portrays that in every possible way. It's just that nudity thing, I just kind of have to laugh at because we see naked, sexy, erotic stuff every day of our life on commercials, on social media, in ads, on the billboards. And yet here I have this beautiful 180-year-old painting and they find that
right
inappropriate.
When I look at it, and you have tastefully put words in locations on, you know, that are deliberate, but I must say that I go straight to her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh.
It's like
it,
because I honestly I wasn't familiar with the famous painting, so I didn't even know that. But it's like her eyes are all knowing, and it's really, I that's what I saw there. So, what's up next for you, my friend? I'm sure there's always a book going on.
Well, yeah. So that's what's so funny because I've written two historicals and everybody's like, so what's your next historical? Which I do already have a storyline for that. That's for another conversation.
Okay.
So my next book actually, so I am a single story author. I do not write series. And I I didn't want to be put in a box either because I'm a creative. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to be able to write whatever comes to me because they do come to me. So my third book actually is a contemporary novel. And I just want to say really quickly, because a lot of novels today, the main character, movies, shows, whatever you want to look at it, you'll get this. If she's a woman over 40, you don't see her. She's not the main character. Nobody wants to know about her life. We're always put, if you notice, we're always in roles of mothers who the daughter doesn't get along with, or in grandmotherly roles that we are wise and, you know, give them knowledge. But we're never the main character. So this next novel is taking a woman who is in her late 40s, I think early 50s, and she's the main character. And she's going to find love, and she's going to be sensual and significant, and it's going to be intriguing. Because I think there's nothing wrong with women over 40.
Seriously.
Being the main character of her life, not being relegated to some mother role or grandmotherly role, that we actually are significant and impassioned and as vivacious as any 25, 30-year-old about life, love, and the pursuit of it.
I love that. I think that that's great. Mm-hmm. And I think it appeals to so many when you say that. You know, I think that's a very appealing concept. So we had just a few minutes left, and I like to ask this when there's some time left. And so I know you weren't expecting me to ask you this, but I don't think this will be the least bit difficult for you to answer. And that is, how do you find balance in your life? How do you balance that creative mindset, you know, working on a novel, working on a historical, doing all those things, and your life itself? How do you stay in balance?
Well, when I'm working on a book, my husband will attest to this, I go to my office and I work 8-10 hours a day because I'm immersed in the story, and it's really hard to find balance. But with that said, and I get a lot of, you know, these things from younger writers who have families, because my kids are older now, but I started writing when my kids were smaller, and it's really hard. And I used to write from like 11 at night till 2 or 3 in the morning, because that was when the only time I had, you know, because I had to take care of family and work and household and sports and everything else, and there wasn't any time. So that balance is really hard. I don't want anybody to think that, you know, I don't understand that, you know, I've got a family, I got a life, I got a job, I can't do this. But for me now, my kids are older, I write all day long, but I have other interests. You know, I love to garden. You know, you've seen on my Instagram, I'm a big flower, gardener, and I take lots of pictures.
Yes, you are.
I love working outside. I love, you know, taking my dog for a walk and looking at nature. That's how you get away from it. That's how you balance your life, finding happiness and other things. Also, I love to, you know, my new thing, you'll see it. I like making cocktails. It's a new interest for me, you know, learning how to be a mixologist.
Wow.
So it's just,
okay.
Yeah.
That's so funny you should bring that up. I don't remember who I was talking to this weekend, but we got on the conversation of cocktails, and this person said, you know, I used to drink Singapore slings all the time, and I went, oh, my God, I don't remember the last time I heard that term. Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny?
Coming back, all the cocktails, those old, like when I was younger, in my 20s, I'd go to New York for work, and I would be with my big management, and then the server would come up, and they go, you like, yeah, I go, I'll have a 7 and 7, and they'd all look at me like, how old are you, 80?
Oh, my gosh, that's so funny. That is funny, and it has so much to do with, you know, just your lifestyle. You know, my husband was a tremendous chef. I wouldn't call him a cook. He was a tremendous chef, and I was a really good table setter. I have so many dishes I could go a year without repeating a dish. But and I don't mean what you eat. I mean what you eat on. You know, it's so funny because, you know, we all bring our own specialness to whatever it is that we do. Mm-hmm. Some people know what that is. Some people know what their purpose is. Others, they might not, and that's okay too. But I sort of feel like I have a purpose. I feel that you absolutely have a purpose, and that's a good thing, you know, because then what comes along for me with purpose is gratitude. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think that they are partners in life. If you have a purpose, but you don't feel grateful about it, then what's the point?
Right.
So I do feel that I have a lot of gratitude. So I do a lot of walking. I take yoga once a week. You know, I try to really mix it up a little bit. And I see so many people with their dogs. What kind of a dog do you have? I feel like I remember from last time.
He's a Maltese Cockapoo.
That's right. He's a Cockapoo. So he's a little he's a little guy. He's not one of these big giant doodles that we see everywhere.
No, God. No, less than 20 pounds.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's so great. Well, Elizabeth, this has once again been just a delightful conversation, and you and I both know I don't consider these interviews. This is just you and me sitting down, having a nice conversation, and you are so easy to talk with. I don't mean talk to.
Aww.
I mean talk with. And I want to just thank you again for joining me today. Maybe we make this a yearly thing where we just see, well, so what did you do since last year? But I want to thank you because I think that people that will listen to this, especially if I would just say to all of you out there that are in book clubs, this may really be something that you would like to do with your book club where you could do a Zoom with Elizabeth. I know she'd be up to that. She's very easy to find.
Absolutely.
She's very easy to contact. So just thank you once again for spending this afternoon with me. It was a pleasure, truly.
Thank you, Marcia. I want to say one thing to you when you said you have a purpose, and I think I might have said this before, but your purpose, you bring so much joy to me when I read and watch or listen to your podcast and I see you on Facebook. Your purpose really is to bring joy into the world, and I think you do a great job at that, and I enjoy talking with you, but when I'm with you and I hear your voice, I just feel joy, so I wanted to thank you for that.
That was a gift. My mother-in-law would say, don't try and talk her out of that, Marcia. She would say, just say thank you. So thank you. That was really kind what you said. And I will let you get on with your day. I will go ahead and close out our podcast now, but I look forward to doing this again. But I also look forward to staying in touch, Elizabeth. You are somebody special in my
thank
life.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, everybody.